the equivalent of a union card for scientists, but there weren't any jobs in ecology, and I didn't really want one anyway. I was lucky enough to be out of debt. Unlike many graduates today, the state mostly paid for my higher education, and I was able to pay the bills by working as a freelance writer, editor, and translator, skills I mainly taught myself through reading and writing. Like many people in our over-programmed and over-sanitized society, I was yearning for an authentic experience of life, to do something that made a difference, to grow as a whole person. I was about to receive it in abundance. Within 3 years, I married my Spanish girlfriend. We had one daughter and another was on the way. We became active in the neighborhood of Bilbao where we were living, organizing a citizens' forum to stop its demolition and propose sustainable alternatives. After a year of that, we'd realized that our dreams of living in a trendy, green, car-free urban paradise would not come true for decades, if ever. Reality was pollution, dog shit, and heavy traffic, closed minds, and the frustration of living with a small child in the city. We didn't even have a garden until I occupied a disused concrete landing stage in front of our block of flats and made one, out of used tires filled with sawdust, scrounging soil and plants where I could. In terms of effort versus positive impact, it may be the most effective action I've ever taken. It felt good to make something with my own hands, and 9 years later, much to my surprise, the riverside garden is still in use by passers-by and residents, lovers and fishermen, but it was a small improvement to an unsatisfactory situation. Another thing that happened, sadly, in those 3 years was the death of my grandparents. With the modest inheritance, we were able to buy a plot of land with a great view in a tiny village an hour from Bilbao. This was the dream that had been softly calling me all these years, to build a house, to build a home. Ecology, from the Greek oikos, literally means the study of home, the context in which an organism lives, its relationships with everyone else, with everything else. We would continue our work based in the city and in the neighbourhood while we built our dream house, not a holiday cottage or weekend retreat, but a place to live, work and grow. Knowing we had a lot to learn, though unable to imagine just how much or what it would cost us, we conceived this as an educational project from the start. We would invite volunteers to come and trade labour for experience. Realistically, that was the only way we'd be able to afford it, without going into debt and spending our lives slaving away to pay for a house we wouldn't be able to enjoy. We would do a lot of it ourselves and work with cheap materials, including clay soil from the site itself. That way, at least, our inevitable mistakes would cost us only time instead of money. So, my dreams came down with a bump, precisely, to earth. My castles in the air would be castles in Spain, but first I would have to build them.
Thank you.
And you have built it.
Yes, I have. That's right. That's the introduction to the book, you see. To get you to read on.
Very good. Yeah. Very good. Very good.
I'll buy one now.
Yeah, I want to.
Yeah, I'll take
next.
One.
Okay. All right. Start a crowdfunding campaign. That's what you do these days, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, it would be more effective if there were 200 people here instead of six, but thank you all for making the effort to come. And,
but
you know,
why not just
really
stick it on YouTube and, you know, get a crowdfunding campaign going?
Can't be asked. I mean, you know, what I need, I don't need money to write the book. I need time, you know. I don't need a bunch of people saying, when is it going to be? So, you know.
Well, they do.
But if any of you can persuade
let you be.
Seal Hayne to invite me back as a writer in residence or something like that, you know, that would be really cool because it's a really, really cool place to write, actually. You know, it's really nice. And you know,
maybe if you build
around.
A little writer's retreat here.
Sorry?
You could build a little writer's retreat here.
Yeah, I could, but that would kind of be a little bit of a distraction.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think actually the last thing you need is more buildings. There's like 50 of them down there that you haven't even done up yet.
Yeah.
But yeah, actually the room I'm in is fine. It's right over the bistro, you know. It's like, you know, really cool.
Mm. So where's your family now?
Well, actually my daughter's staying with my mum in Leamington Spa. And my wife and my other daughter are in Spain, but they're coming over. We're all going up there to stay for a while, and then we're going back to Spain in a few days. So I'm going off on the train tomorrow.
It is.
Well, okay.
And a rough idea of the location.
Right, okay. Well, the houses are on the, or very close to the north coast of Spain, between Santander and Bilbao, and it's actually the location is remarkably similar to where we are now. That is to say, it's kind of up above the valley, and you have a view of the valley and this river going off into the distance, and you can just about see the sea. And it's
kind of small sloping plot of land. Small, when I say small, it's smaller than this, so it's about maybe as big as from here to the other end of the horticultural garden, perhaps, that kind of size. And the first house we built is a small cabin where we were living for 4 years, 2 years part-time, 2 years full-time, while we were building the main house. And that's like a little cob cabin. And then the main house is a two-story house. I wouldn't build a two-story house if I started building again today. but these are some of the mistakes that you have to, you know, learn not to make. You know, building stuff the right size is almost the most important thing. So it's a two-story house. It's kind of not square. It's sort of crescent-shaped. Crescent-shaped. So yeah. It's kind of got a, you know, a protected area in front of it and this to the south. And, you know, there's kind of a big curved wall at the back that's protecting it from the wind. And it's, you know, it's very organic, really. The whole thing is very organic. We have a website.
Is it a house that will just continue to be kind of refurbished and repaired?
It's a house that will stand there. I'm willing to make a prediction that the house will be there when this book is forgotten.
very broad.
You know, and that doesn't matter how good a book it is. Cob houses, if somebody's living in them, they're basically immortal. They need to be plastered every so often or painted every so often, like any other house. But there are there are about 100,000 cob houses in Britain. Most of them are in Devon and Cornwall, and a lot of them are hundreds of years old. The oldest one's about 1300. And the reason that there are so many and that they're so old is because they're good houses to live in and they don't burn down, like a lot of medieval houses made of wood have. So it's a very durable building material. It doesn't wash away in the rain like some people think. I think...
Is it entirely cob, or did you mix a little bit of cement in with
mix? No cement. Cement and cob don't go together. They're like oil and water. If you do want to kind of do a stabilised earth mixture, you have to use lime instead of cement. But we didn't do that. And it's a good thing, actually. The process of drying cob is a physical process. There's just the water evaporating. And once that's happened, if you want to rework it, if you want to change anything, you just either wet it again or you basically hack it and then wet it and reuse the cob and rebuild with it. It's an infinitely recyclable material. And yet, when it's dry, it'll last forever. If you open up a cob wall that's 500 years old, the wood and the straw in the wall are still in perfect condition because of the low humidity inside the cob wall.
And is that because the lime draws the water, the dampness out? Or?
It's not the lime, it's the clay, really. The clay is it regulates the humidity. The cob wall is made up of clay, sand, straw, and water. Originally, when it's wet, obviously, and then the water evaporates.
It sounds the ideal building material, doesn't it?
Well, it's a pretty good one. You can't build a house out of cob, but you can build a pretty good wall out of cob. You need to do something else with the roof, though. I mean, you know, it's a cob house. They say it's a cob house, but actually it's a house with a cob wall.
Yeah.
Really. And you need to have a stone foundation as well to keep cob off the ground. And so they say the cob house has to have good boots and a good hat.
So the stone goes under.
You have a stone plinth, which is maybe up to here, and then you start with a cob, basically.
Yeah, that's how they are here.
And what's the roof made of?
Yes.
We have a living roof, actually. So it's a wooden structure with basically like a pond liner on top of it, and then on top of that goes a substrate, so it's like a gigantic plant pot on top of the house, basically, with stuff growing on it.
You said building to the right size was perhaps the most important thing.
Yeah.
The right size for your family or the right size for your skill?
Both. Right. Both. Because you can, you know, if you haven't built anything else before, you either need some help from somebody who has, or you need to start with a small project. So, you know, it's tempting, you know, to say, build this size, but it